Hello and welcome back to a new episode of the Digital Economics Podcast. Today I have Nalin here, the founder and CEO of StoryLane, which is a company which gives you like the chance to make a really easy onboarding for your customers or like creating a demo for your tech product. I really like the tool, so I invited Nalin today to be on my show. And the cool thing about StoryLane is that it's part of Y Combinator. We talk about this later on. If people know Y Combinator, awesome. If you don't know, it's like an accelerator, which is pretty known in the startup world, which helps companies like Airbnb, etc., to build their company. And also Sam Altman, the OpenAI founder, was part of it. So it's really an interesting network, I would say. So we also talked about this a little bit, and in general how remote work is working well, about the Apple Vision Pro. I think it's a really, really cool episode. I enjoyed this podcast so much. I hope you do it too. Welcome to the episode and let's get it started. Welcome to a new episode of the Digital Economics Podcast. Today I have Nalin here from StoryLane. Can you explain in a few words what StoryLane is? And so happy to have you here today.
Yeah, no, definitely. Thanks for having me, Lewis, here. And StoryLane is an interactive demo platform. We launched the company a couple of years back. Marketing teams, sales teams, customer success and onboarding teams use us today to show interactive demos, to show what your product does to your potential buyers. So we've grown in the last couple of years quite a lot, and we have a lot of companies, customers use it and seeing a great value. Yeah.
And you're a founder and CEO of such a cool company. It was actually recommended to me by another product manager who was like, yeah, we are using this since a long time. It's really well working for you. And what you're doing is supporting the onboarding flow for software tools, right? So I just have a simple installation into my tool, and then I can say, okay, users should always see, like, I'm clicking first here. This is what it's doing. I'm clicking here. This is what it's doing.
That is correct in some ways, but the use cases of StoryLane are multifold. Since our vision is to make sure like it's easy for a buyer to see your product and make it as frictionless as possible so that they can buy something, right? Buy a SaaS software. And at the same time, make it easy for sellers so that they're able to show what the product is doing. So with that, the use case becomes multifold, right? In marketing, looking at marketing, people put this even on their website, right? So they can show what the product does first time when a buyer comes to his website. So they can get a sense and feel of what the product does. Definitely sales use cases, because they're evaluating, going through trial, doing POCs. You want to show the nudges of your product and give sandbox experience. We support that. And you talked about onboarding. It's a big use case we are seeing, is like traditional onboardings are in-app onboardings. And people just want to dismiss this and get into the product once they are. But now it's totally an onboarding. A lot of people do it is like inside the product, is like they can kind of use it when they want, right? They can and see what it is and kind of minimize it and go into what the product is asking them to do. So people use this in onboarding also a lot. And the other last case is like customer success, right? Hey, documentations, training docs, materials. It's a great way to educate how something works as well. So we're seeing a lot of use cases around it, but our primary persona being more on marketing and sales, where we're seeing this great adoption.
All right, let's pause for a moment and let me introduce you to today's sponsor, DealFront. It can be a struggle to reach decision makers, but imagine this, a tool that helps you target ideal fit leads and close deals all within a single platform. More than 10,000 companies, including Amazon, Telecom, Hertz, Siemens, Bubble, and Deutsche Bahn, use DealFront to find new customers and increase their sales. The platform provides comprehensive company information, identifies purchase intent, and automatically directs website visitors as leads to your CRM system. The seamlessly integrated tools help target decision makers in your desired companies, convert website visitors into potential customers, and approach companies at the right time. With DealFront, you get three layers of data: market signals, web visitors, and European company databases, plus it's GDPR compliant. Quickly pinpoint decision makers, grab their direct contact details, and start meaningful conversations with DealFront. Head over to dealfront.com for a free demo today. Okay, back to the episode.
How did you came up with the whole universe, the idea you're having right now?
So, question, but I think there's a lot to it there. I mean, this is not my first company. This is my second company. So firstly, my previous company, when we built it, as a founder, you're selling a lot and you're showcasing your product. You're talking to potential, buyers of that. So when we went through the journey, we found some challenges, and it was a PLG company where product led, but still we had to show the product very early on and do it. So that's one of the places where we discovered hey, there's a lot of gaps and challenges. And when COVID happened, this was a lot of digital buying adoption happened. So digital selling, digital buying happened. So we felt like in all the digital buying and selling, the crux of everything is the product. People come for product, buy your products. And everything outside of product is more digital except the product itself, right? Being there. Mm-hmm. We felt like we need to change that and make it more easy and seamless. And that's kind of led to building StoryLink. Mm-hmm. Partly driven by our previous company experience we went through, and kind of when COVID happened, we said okay, digital product and how to show it becomes very important. We started building that.
Can we talk a little bit about your previous company? It was KinderLime, right?
Yes.
A daycare app for like a childcare daycare app.
Correct. It's for early education market. Yes, childcare market. It's a SaaS product, PLG. So it's a very underserved market in some ways. Because typically edtech market always doesn't have the latest and greatest technology. They catch up, right? They have a 5 to 10 year lag period. So what we did was we built out a SaaS platform, very easy to use for schools and early education market, so that they can take care of the back office, better way to communicate with parents. So we spent some time there and then sold this to a PE firm. Another PE firm is basically a private equity firm who bought this as a part of a bigger chain of companies. And that's what we did that time. And then there are big players in that space. We went and built out a more modern and tech-friendly product, user-friendly product for the schools and teachers today. Yeah.
And within this product, you recognize, onboarding and sales and making a demo of a product is almost the biggest part of the problems you were facing?
Yeah, I mean, when we built it, right? So for the platform, so you sell to schools, right? I mean, they are less technical. They don't understand some of these things. The second is they're very busy. They don't get on calls and demos and everything. They're on the clock busy in any schools, teachers and staff. And so you need to show what the product does. And it's not the sophisticated that a PLG will work for them. They'll self-serve, sign up and learn about it, right? I mean, they're not. So there has got to be a better way to demonstrate product rather than just showing slide decks and PDFs and documents, right? So what happened is you have to be more digital and buying. Mm-hmm. So there were some challenges around that. Now you can see. Mm-hmm. Now you can take that and map it to any kind of SaaS vertical market, and you feel hey, the best way to show products doesn't exist there today. Mm-hmm. Right from your website and a sales guy talking later in the funnel too.
How did you came up with that idea? Because I think it's so natural, like the StoryLink story. Okay, you build application. You saw onboarding is really important, but daycare I think is a pretty non technical topic. I see you more as a technical founder. You were a software engineer, senior engineer, tech lead, etc. Before, how did it came up that you were let's jump into daycare?
Sure. I think it goes a little bit back even further. I would say for around 15, 18 years back, I would say. So yes, by trade, I'm a technical person. My background basically being more at research science and then more on machine learning and computer vision. That's what I've done. Worked in Amazon for a couple of years as well. Then very technically built AR glasses, augmented reality glasses, very early in the market in a company called Daqri. I was a CTO there, spent 6 years there. So you can see it's very deep tech, a lot of research, a lot of things. And that was how I started in the tech world itself, right? So the eye opener for me was in the Daqri when I spent 5 to 6 years building the company. I was the first engineer along with the founders. So very deep tech, but then we were too early. There's no product market fit and we failed. So basically we had to dissolve the company and I also left. So one thing I learned is tech is great. Tech is wonderful and you can do all the tech. But if you don't know who the market is, which I didn't have control about, who you're selling to in the product, reality struck, tech is something I'm more comfortable. I can always build a tech, but I need to find a space and product where I need to be able to thrive. So with that, I have two kids and they were going to my school, early education. Okay. And I met my co-founder who started the company at that point. Mm-hmm. And then so I was advising. And then after Daiquiri, my previous AR company, we just decided to close it. Then we realized like, hey, what's next? Since I was advising him, there's a clear traction there. So we said, let's go build this where there's a clear value prop and let's build a simple modern looking product, which will make it appealing. So that kind of led to it. I mean, I met my co-founder who started the company and my kids were there. So that's how we started getting that feel of like, hey, there's a gap in this space and building it. And of course, from there, you know, StewardLink came up because, you know, when we were building, we saw those issues. And it's not just because of those issues we built out StewardLink. I was saying you, right, the digital buying happening. And we also saw a lot of companies building homegrown sandbox. If you go to products like Amplitude, Gusto, they always have a demos on their website. It's not built by StewardLink or anybody, but they have home built it. So companies in modern ways today think about attracting buyers is like showcasing the products more and more. We felt like that is something the need of the hour and from what we have experienced. So we started building that.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting story. Like your life, it really feels natural, like step by step going through your CV. Every step makes kind of sense to me. Would you do it again, like being a founder? I guess yes, but like with all the knowledge you have today, do you think it was like a cool decision to say at one day, like, okay, I want to found a company?
Yeah.
What do you recommend?
Right. Yeah, 100%, right? I mean, I've also worked in a big company like Amazon for a couple of years, right? And this is in 2009-10, right? It's been like 12, 13 years, I think, haven't been a big company or either been a startup, leading a team, big teams, but again, been a startup building something. So yeah, I highly recommend it definitely for anybody to be a founder because building a business, because you become... So if you're a tech person, you're only focusing on tech, you're a product person, but when you build something, then you are thinking about how do you make the business profitable? How do you make money from the business? So you start looking at all the different angles as a business. So anybody starting a company with a background in tech and product is, I find, to be like super beneficial because always they know what's good at it from building it and they start getting other talents as well. So definitely, I highly recommend for anyone to start it. Mm-hmm. And then it's the best way to experience what world is out about.
happy to hear. I'm so excited about this tech founder world. I really love it, but people are like, oh my gosh, I need to build something. And going through like story lane background research, I recognized you're backed by Y Combinator, which is a deep love of mine. I'm not 100% sure actually, but I think you're the first company in my podcast with being Y Combinator backed. And I am soaking like every video Y Combinator is putting online. I think there's no video I haven't seen, and I'm a big fan of Y Combinator. Can you tell a little bit about the story of you with Y Combinator?
Sure. We went to Y Combinator Summer 21 batch. And then so this happened a little bit by chance for us, Y Combinator. So we weren't planning to apply for Y Combinator because after the previous company, the Kinderlime, and then we felt like, hey, we built some company, we did an exit to a PE firm. We felt like we know a lot of things and why even we have to go through YC, we can build it. But then one of our conversations with one of the mentors, colleagues, they mentioned about like, hey, you should, right? So then we did apply for the last year YC. We didn't have any like product or anything built out. We applied to YC with just saying that, hey, this is what we're planning to build. And once we got into YC, it felt like, oh, wow, okay, now we have to go build a product quickly because YC has a demo.
So you had zero users at that point?
No, okay. No product, right? So we quickly built some team, like 2-3 people we hired. We invested some capital quickly to build the product because there is a demo day that comes and we need to build the product to show what the product will do, attract investors. That's typical YC. So we definitely spent during the YC time, apart from talking to those advisors, mentors, we were definitely building MVP of the product very quickly. So when we came out of YC, we did have an MVP, but we didn't have a customer after the YC demo day. I mean, we had like one or two customers, I would say, who POC is trialing. And then really we launched around like after YC demo day a month later. And then when we launched the product itself around October timeframe or November 21. So far after that, it's been great. And then we've been getting customers. There's a lot of inbound through it and there's a lot of word of mouth that's spread through this product we have. It's been good. But the experience in YC was like product building, talking to them. And the experience that I had in YC, even though we had a company before, I highly recommend YC. It's an accelerator, right? That's run. When we did it, it was during COVID. So it was all remote. So we didn't have the ideal setting of in-person interactions, but we still felt it way better. It's very, you know, the way I put it is like, it's definitely being in a group, the huddle, like people who are like other founders, networking with them is super valuable. It's kind of infectious. It spurs you on to do more in some ways. And the advice from those mentors are definitely a lot valuable. You feel like you know a lot of things, but then you realize there's a lot to learn, right? And YC was definitely a lot that we learned from as well. And most important, I would say, is like the effect of the alumni, the founders around you just keeps you going. And then you can rely on them if you have any time questions as well.
And how did you get into YC? I think like thousands of people are applying. So I think you can definitely be really proud of being part of YC.
100%. Yeah, YC gets around 20,000 plus applications each batch. And I think they select 350 companies. So definitely acceptance rates is very low and definitely very... lucky and less, humbled by that. But I think getting into YC was definitely very good for us as well. And how did we get into? I think they have a standard process of interviews that they do with the companies. So we went through a pitch, shared the video, told what we're building. So I think they just wanted to, I mean, YC looks at like founders, chemistry, and if this is a viable market, so who can do it? So we were able to show that. To get through it, I think.
What do you think are the main things we are looking for? Like a good team or like your background being at an Amazon employee or a great technical understanding in general or your product idea? What is the main thing we are looking for? Or a combination, probably.
I think it's all of everything you said, right? I think everything needs to come together. I think the most important thing they look for is definitely the team. And are these the right people to build this? If they are not the right people, do they have the right background experience to build that? Like, have they gone through it personally? Right. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you create a new category. And when you create a new category of a product, you may not have the right background to it, but you might have the right experience of going through that pain that you're able to solve today. So it's a combination of that. Plus, are they product builders? Can they innovate faster? YC is all also about like how quick an experiment you can do. And because invariably, companies will pivot. When you build a company, you have an idea, you didn't get a customer, you should have the backbone and strength to pivot also. Pivot, when I say, it's like come up with another idea, just switch over. So the resiliency matters within a founder, whether they can do all of that. So they look for all of these things. I mean, they have done this for the last 15 years, YC. So they know how to do quickly. They know how to find this quickly within people. So they use that. You know, I look at YC mentors and they feel like they have a brain trust of like a big LLM type model right in the brain. They can tell a founder quickly yes or no, right? They've trained themselves over 15 years is what I feel.
By the way, did you met some Altman at YC?
No, some point? I mean, we were in one batch. I mean, he was probably he's probably 10 years before, right? Yeah.
I think that's so crazy. Like that someone like Sam Altman was like such a big part of Y Combinator for such a long time, and you still cannot see all the videos. And like now, he's the founder of OpenAI. It's just crazy. Totally. It's such a crazy world. How is your working together with Y Combinator nowadays? Is it more like working with alumni at some point, or is Y Combinator still like a thing and a part of your company?
So we graduate. So we do have connections. We have access to their portals. Anytime we want to go in, it helps in job hiring. Anytime we want to talk to another founder, we can reach out at least. So definitely all of those are there. And even if you have to go back to our advisors from YC, we can set up an office hours, talk to them. So it's great. So we do meet every few months. Definitely less as the company graduates and grows through it. You know, what they set you up was like to figure things out yourself, right? And then we figure things out when we run into a roadblock, we have some decisioning to make, questions to ask, and they are like the sounding board some ways. So we set up some time once in 6 months to chat and get some feedback of, hey, are we doing it right? What is your thought, right? So they have seen hundreds of companies, so they can give their opinion from what they have seen. And it's up to us to take it or not, but at least they will say what they've seen. So that knowledge is helpful always.
And you also have other investors. You have Altair Capital and Redbird Ventures. How is your feeling in general, like with taking seed money from outside? So how's your experience with that?
Yeah, we didn't raise a large amount of round because, I mean, I come from a little different thought process slightly because, but I guess a lot of them have the same thought process today. What I'm saying is like people try to raise less capital and then be more efficient. So we are of that. So we raised a small round, around 1.5 seed, and then but being very capital efficient, and then throughout. And then so that's basically what the way we look at it. You know, focus on more like a clear revenue model, profitable growth, and then before you take a bigger rounds. So we did small round, a lot of angels, and a couple of them Altair, point they were mentioned as well, along with the YCs, and then. So yeah, so that's how we raised it. And then very efficient. When I say efficiency, it's more like spend where there is ROI clearly without just putting all the money and trying to grow. And then and something you see some signs, then invest there. That's how we've been doing it.
And how close are you to being profitable? Or is this already the case?
No, we are. And I think at this case, We are profitable, but at this case, but we are not like as a company, small company, when you're growing, we are around 40 people now. As a growing company, then you don't want to be really so much profitable. You want to invest back. So we try not to be and try to invest in the areas where we think will help us grow, but not in a way that we dump everything, but invest efficiently again.
And how do you, what do you think are the main factors that you create this environment where you can be almost profitable or profitable if you want to? What makes StoryLane more efficient than other companies?
So, I mean, I think it starts literally with your the founder's mentality. I mean, if you ask me simple, it's like, if you want to spend, you can always go and spend anywhere. Right? I mean, like, it really starts from how you're approaching to build the business, right? Your mentality. And the previous company, we were very, you know, put it frugal, efficiently building it. So it's not that the economy in the COVID and after that made us do that. So it's something that we kind of been doing for a while, right? So it's not like forced upon. Something you're doing. So when it's not forced upon, something you like to do that way is a very important factor to build it in a more profitable or efficient way. The reason is like you enjoy doing it this way rather than being forced upon to do it efficiently. When it's forced upon, you feel like there's a forcing factor to it and it may not work out well. So that is the most important criteria, I feel.
So right? You don't drive a Lambo?
Yeah.
No Lamborghini?
Right. And then definitely not, right? So then you do it in this way because you enjoy doing it this way. And that is the number one, I would say, the criteria to build it, right? And everything else takes care after that, right? Because if your mind is set to build efficiently, you will figure out a way to make it work, right? Instead of spending on so much on marketing and hiring in different places, you will force yourself to find this, not compromising quality, but at the same time, efficiently achieving few things, definitely. And the remote work has definitely helped. So because our team is remote, hiring people outside of US reduces the cost. So we have people outside. We do have people inside US, but at the same time, we mix it up with the right talent, who needs to be hired where. So all that is efficiency in some ways.
And yeah, see, there's a mixture of India and the United States. And I think that's mostly it.
In Europe.
Yeah.
We have folks in Europe as well.
Ah, okay. Okay.
Majority is Europe, India, and US. So those are the three places we have, definitely. So yeah, mixing it up is very, very important. And then, so that builds some efficiency. And also like talking about efficiency, sales, right? So it's not like typically they end up hiring a head of sales, a lot of sales AEs, sales to start selling and doing outbound and selling it. So we've been a little very efficiently trying to do it through more inbound initially. And then a lot of sales was done by myself and my co-founder initially the first year. And a lot of times companies like, hey, once you get like first 20 customers, get a salesperson, start replicating, hire 5 people and do it, right? We don't go with the model. What we did is like, we did the sales until we were very comfortable to bring in an AE. I mean, like I still do sales, I still do demos and everything. Now I do it not for like efficiency perspective. Now I do it because I need to be closer to the customer at different stages of the journey. So I have a framework or model, how I like it. So that's the reason I do it today. But going back to efficiency, like you need to know, even after like 100 customers, you can still do a demo calls. And that's what we did to be more efficient.
How do you get the clients who schedule demo calls?
Oh, how do I? Sorry,
How is the marketing done? Like, where's the situation where someone is like, "Yeah, I want to schedule a demo call."
Yes, the marketing is basically like we have two parts, right? One is people can come, sign up to our website, self-serve themselves, or they can talk to us. And when they talk to us, it would just the marketing is basically like pretty much in terms of content, a lot of thought leadership content on this demo automation. Plus LinkedIn, a lot of them on LinkedIn. So to build a brand around it. So the second part is like our product is demo. So people showcase these things. So there is a network viral effect around it. So another B2B buyer sees the product, knows, hey, this is cool. How do I know it? Like just like how you found out about us, somebody told you. So there is some network effect to it and we get inbound through that as well a lot.
But you didn't do too much like cold calling or something like this, or was this something you did at any point in
we your haven't and 95% for us is inbound and inbound, and I say it's like people looking for us and coming to us, and very less outbound, like cold calls. We have never done a cold call so far.
I like that.
Yeah,
I hate when someone's calling me randomly, or all these sneaky LinkedIn messages like, "Hey," and yeah, okay, cool. Is this also something which is taught within Y Combinator? Like doing this kind of marketing, like being pretty much inbound.
That's not what they teach. What's the most important takeaway, if you ask me about Y Combinator, is like, you know, they focus a lot on generating revenues. Like what it means is like build something what people want is what they go by, their motto. And it's very true to, if you want to go through that, is especially like the way you look at it is like, hey, whatever you're building, right, you need to build like somebody will pay for it. So my focus is like you talk to a lot of people and then they will give you like, hey, this is cool product, this is great, but I think the real value comes in when they swipe the credit card and pay the money to you. So you need to really make sure like your product is not like cool, nice, but they're ready to swipe a card and use it, credit card. So kind of YC teaches you that. And that's the main thing for them. Like don't build something that you think they will need. It's a vaporware, but really get the money from the person. So which means like you build really what people want and you're generating revenue. So the moment you're seeing revenue, then it's not about like inbound, outbound. They don't have like a framework for you to follow. Every product is different. How you do it is different. But the moment you found the first few people, then you will figure out what worked and continue to drill down on that. That's basically what they focus
on. But like in general, like that you're having this subscription model that people are paying on a monthly basis, etc. That's pretty typical, I guess. And also this freemium model that you have something for free, I guess that's also pretty typical.
So in product like subscription, we are SaaS. So it's a subscription model. There is always a free version. Then there is like a few paid version. We went with free because it allows us to, you know, show the product for even startups and early stage companies so that one demo they can build for free. So something that we felt like will be very important to target like even a starters who wants to try it out quickly as well.
You said remote work is a big thing in your company. I had founders in this call, in this podcast, who were saying, mostly German founders, that they don't like remote work and that they don't really think it's working. I am still struggling finding a strong opinion about this whole thing. But can you tell me a little more about this, how it's working for you and what things you implement that remote work is working pretty well?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think, again, this goes into your mentality. Like I mentioned to you, right? It's a mindset, right? It has to be. Or like, there are challenges in both, remote and in person. So even our previous company, before Storyline, Kinderline, we were remote, half of the team. So we had a hybrid model before even the term existed. After COVID, everybody understands hybrid model. We were hybrid even before COVID in some ways. Again, accounting. So I'm a believer of remote work because people are more efficient that way. I'm efficient, but I think it matters on who you bring in, the right people. And if they believe in the same way, efficiency and being able to independently build things, self-sufficient, then remote will work for the company. It has lots of advantages. Definitely, there are some drawbacks around it. But again, same happens with in-person, right? A lot of advantages, drawbacks, right? It depends on your team members and what tips the scale and what product you're building also. So for us, I find a lot of value in remote because people work from different geographical locations and countries and time zones. We just sort of, people don't sleep. What I mean by that is like 24/7, somebody's working in Storyland, right? It's a lot of efficiency. I'm not using only 12 hours a day, 12 hours sleeping, right? People are working, right? I mean, engineers are working, some in India and then some in Europe. So constantly we're building things. It helps in efficiency if you collaborate efficiently. We use Slack to collaborate efficiently. So at some point, I see sometimes when you scale up, right? Hey, I'm 100 people, will remote continue to work? There are companies who have done it efficiently. I admire them. So we feel like it can, and it does take extra effort to over-communicate with people. It does take extra effort to make them feel part of the goal as well. So those are the things we do to make them. You know, there are a lot of advantages. People come in saying that, hey, I don't want to commute and I don't want to spend the time on things that don't matter to me. I want to spend time on that extra 1 hour of commute I would spend with my family. So people get excited about that. And those are the type of people we like to bring in who like remote work.
So do we have offices at all?
No, we don't have offices. I think hybrid is the right way to go. So giving opportunity for people to be remote and giving opportunity for people to come to the office, definitely.
Okay, nice. I like your like pragmatic opinion about this. And I also see the huge chances of like people working from different places together at one thing. And I'm working remote myself and I really, really enjoy it. I think it's a good thing. two last questions. Apple Vision Pro, as you were working on the smart helmet, like the augmented reality company yourself, what is your opinion on the Apple Vision Pro? I think I have an expert here.
To be honest with you, I mean, I haven't tried it. I would love to at this point. I haven't tried it yet because there's a big queue, I guess, to get that in the US. You know, this was, AR was like 5-6 years. I mean, like I spent 5 years. This was 2014 around then. It's been like I'm out of it for 8-9 years. And like you have to get out of that space to do something else, software, you know, like what I'm doing today, sales and marketing. You need to immerse yourself in space. So I'm not going to be the expert today. The reason being is like I'm out of that space 10 years back completely, right? I gave that space of 5 years, but then I'm out of that space. But I'm very excited. And I think when I started AR, we definitely felt like this is the future of it. But we were just too early, 10 to 14. Apple is launching. We were 10 years early, right? And the market wasn't there. It's a very complex, challenging Apple Vision Pro. I would love to try it because the problem typically is like building a hardware and software because there's a lot that goes to it. There's so much capital and only a big player like Apple, Microsoft, Google can actually crack this up. As a startup, when we started, it was just too hard to burn cash around that. Building hardware is hard. On top of that, you're building a very deep tech is even more harder. We didn't have a lot of capabilities at that point. The tech has improved a lot. For example, running things on device was definitely way easier today as compared to 14 years back, right? Running on a hardware compute. So things have evolved a lot. That's made definitely easier. So, so looking forward to try Apple Vision Pro as well in terms of how it looks as well. Yeah.
Do you think we will see Storyland in 5 years implemented for products within the Apple Vision Pro?
So I think Storyland runs on a browser. I think it'll be. I think we sell to B2B. And I think the biggest value I see with the AR is like probably more in the B2C space a lot, right? Especially with Apple being in the consumer market. For businesses, we see a lot of training workers and everything. Definitely in AR world. Definitely. So why not? So definitely understanding what a product does, understanding a spatial product, maybe, right? Inside Apple Vision Pro could be useful. So maybe an extension of what we do into a spatial product is what I think the biggest value would be. Yeah.
Awesome. So excited. Did you wanted to say something?
No, I was going to tell you a little bit about like the Apple Vision Pro. So when we talk about like business applications of AR, we typically talk about like how something works, right? Like IKEA furniture, how do I put the furniture together? Industrial component, how do I operate this machine? It is a lot about like how things are done, how this works, but in a spatial world, explaining 1, 2, 3 steps, what is the best way to do it? Now, we kind of do that today in Storylink. It's like for a web product. It's very easy, and that's exactly what they're demonstrating in an interactive way in a spatial world. And I think so, right? So there will be a great opportunity at some point to extend what we are building into a spatial world for businesses. Is probably what I think will be in AR glasses one day.
I think there's such huge potential. Like, imagine like Storylink implemented for IKEA products with the Apple Vision Pro. Mind-blowing.
Can you show me a demo of how this IKEA furniture can be set up? Yeah, for sure, right?
Awesome. Man, if someone wants to implement Storylink into their tech products, how should they do this? How do they reach out to you, or should they just go to your website and try building themselves?
I think, of course, you can reach out to me on LinkedIn anytime if you need me. That's where you'll find me. But if you want to try a product, just go to our website, storylink.io, and then you'll have a button, start free. Sign up and try it out and put it up on your website for sure. That's as easy as it gets. And in 10 minutes, you'll have a demo on your website. If you find like, hey, I need to talk to somebody, no problem. Just talk to a sales, and then somebody in the team will help you also.
Awesome. Thank you so much, man. I think, not 100% sure, but I think first YC-backed company in my podcast. So proud of it. Thank you so much for being today in my show.
Awesome. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening. If you liked this episode, join the podcast, subscribe, give it a thumbs up, whatever you can do in your podcast app. Happy to see you soon, and have a lovely evening. Bye-bye.